I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Parallax is you observe an object, you see a change, but that change is not really a change in the object, but just a change in how you relate to the object in your perspective of the object.
Welcome to the testing room of the Parallax Corporation's Division of Human Engineering.
Will now please cross the chair. And you will sit down. Make yourself comfortable. And be sure to place each one of your hands on the box on either side of the chair. Making sure that each one of your fingers is on one of the white rectangles. Just sit back, nothing is required of you, except to observe the materials that are presented to you. Be sure to keep your fingers on the box at all times. Alright, hope you find the test a pleasant experience.
So Hollywood right now that everything that you say is so predictable. Every story is going to be about, you know, oh, I love this one. And then we went on their yacht and he's a Hollywood insider now, which sucks because you started like me being of the people. But at some point you sat behind that microphone for too long and now you are the people.
What a bug-eyed you. You got those big fake and I'm Hollywood, huh? Shut the up. Worry about your husband, not me. Sick of her. Her bullshit show. I'll bet $20 she pees standing up. I hope her nuts get stuck in a zipper. RuPaul before I fuck her. I watch RuPaul's Drag Race. She makes RuPaul look like Margot Robbie.
It's been the battle of the shock jocks recently as shock jockette Wendy Williams called out Howard Stern, legend of alt radio, for being, in her eyes, a sellout. Or, if we're going to use more shock jockish language, a star f***er. It turns out, though, that Wendy Williams is not Howard Stern's only critic. A group of former fans have come together to expose what they see as the shock jock come pop culture icon's various hypocrisies through the podcast Radio Gunk. On this edition of Parallax Views, Radio Gunk's Monique joins us to discuss why she and others have gone from Howard fanatics to Stern critics. And now, on to the conversation. Welcome to Parallax Views, Monique of Radio Gunk.
Hey.
So, Monique, I wanted to have you on the show because Radio Gunk is an interesting podcast. I want more people to listen to it. It's sort of the anti-Howard Stern podcast. And Howard Stern is, of course, always in the news for something or other, I'm finding out. I thought he was a relic of the 90s, but apparently he's still going pretty strong. But before we get into Howard Stern, tell me a little bit about yourself and maybe about Radio Gunk.
Okay, cool. So Radio Gunk, the inception of that was I designed children's clothing for a very long period of time, and I have off and on seasons. And during the off season, I was basically bored. There I am sitting in front of my, you know, 40-inch Apple computer playing around on the internet. And I used to be part of a Howard Stern forum. And a lot of what was on there was like Photoshop fails because, you know, he fancied himself a photographer for a while and kind of got me interested in what other people were saying about him. And once I saw that, people had a very, very similar view to my own, I kind of got into the whole forum thing and, you know, just ripping into him and the show and Beth and Robin and pretty much everybody associated with it. So since I had a fairly captive audience within that forum, I decided to do a podcast. And the early shows are absolutely horrendous. I mean, just, you know, just a shit show, you know, working off of my Apple with, you know, PlayStation headphones for our mics, and but it was fun and it was silly. And as it started to grow and people actually wanted to come on the show, especially people who used to work with the show and things like that, it just became a really interesting way to have a bunch of disenfranchised fans get together and bitch about the show. So I wound up starting my podcast, then starting a forum, and most people will come over to RadioGunk.com in the forum section and just join with us and listen in the mornings and things like that. So, you know, it's just a fun thing to do. It's certainly not for the money. We are certainly not by any stretch of the imagination professional, and we don't care.
Yeah, I was going to say, I had a similar experience when I started podcasting. I do this podcast independently, and I also work for an imprint called Zero Books, and I do a podcast for them as well. But this one is so independently produced that when I first started it, there were all kinds of audio problems. I was recording it wrong. And, I mean, it's gotten much better now, but getting through that part of it is the worst.
Oh, my God, please. Every time we start recording, I say to the guys, it's like every podcast we do is like it's our first podcast. Every single time. It's always a shit show because I happen to travel a lot and I live in two different places. So I'm carrying equipment with me. I'm carrying computers with me. I'm helping other people figure out their problems. So I'll switch settings. And then all of a sudden I plug my stuff in and nothing works. I hear nothing. I get nothing. And it just drives me insane. So I'm actually, as we were just discussing, I'm actually working on just a whole new setup for me so I can just streamline this as much as possible, be a little bit more social media friendly and not so reliant on just the forum and just kind of let it evolve a little bit. So I'm curious about you, though, because, you know, you're the millennium and you are not necessarily the Howard Stern customer by any stretch of the imagination. So do you listen to him or no?
I can't say that I listen to Howard Stern that much. I've always been peripherally aware of him because I grew up on a pro wrestling. You know, back in the day when it was like WWF Attitude, Howard Stern was all the rage. He sort of influenced that. Him and Jerry Springer sort of influenced how the product was. They even brought some of the guys from the Whack Pack on to WWE programming at one point. And I know Nicole Bass was also on WWE. So I was aware of him through that. And, you know, I've always heard about him just peripherally through my love of media and sort of tabloidy trash culture.
Right. That's exactly what it is. Wait, so if you're not a listener, that makes me all the more curious as to why we're talking to each other. Because I was listening to your shows and I see kind of your take on things and I see a lot of similarities between my personal views on the world at large and how you look at things. And I'm just curious what your thoughts are behind a podcast really just based on one entity by a bunch of people who love to hate him, but hate loving him at the same time.
Well, you know, I listen to a lot of different podcasts. And when I found Radio Gunk, I was like, I don't know much about Howard Stern, but I've had people recommend it to me. And oddly enough, it was also people who don't listen to Howard Stern regularly. I have a friend from Australia who recommended you guys. And he's not a big Howard Stern listener, but he just found it to be like interesting listening, especially because I'm one of these people. I always want to root for the underdog, and I do not see Howard Stern as the underdog. So when I first listened to Radio Gunk, I was like, oh, cool. They're taking on this, you know, Hollywood star fucker, Howard Stern.
He is a behemoth. You can't even know how many times I'm taken down on YouTube. You have no idea. My content is taken down constantly. Yes. Yes, yes. Copyrights and infringements and just everything. And I fight it every time and I usually win and we're able to keep it up. But it's really difficult. And once I was on his radar, the funniest thing is that he blocked me on Twitter the same day his butt buddy Ralph blocked me on Twitter. And then subsequently the entirety of the Whack Pack blocked me as well. So they obviously they are aware of me, and I do everything in my power to get under their skin. I really do. It amuses me. It just amuses me that he would care. He's very thin skinned, not unlike our president. He's very thin skinned, so he doesn't like any bad word spoken about him.
Well, that's the thing. That's why I wanted to talk about Howard Stern, because like Stern to me is just this. He just comes off as like a kind of creepy, insecure asshole. And I guess that's part of the character, but sometimes it seems like it's a bit more than that when I've listened to Radio Gunk. Just to maybe structure this a little bit more, you guys did not start out as Stern haters. How did you guys first get into Howard Stern, and how did you go from being fans to critics?
Well, we were all fans. We were just disenfranchised fans. So all of a sudden, he brings on somebody to head up his corporation in Marcy Turk. Almost simultaneously, he starts on AGT, America's Got Talent, and decides that now he needs to reinvent himself as the family-friendly guy, the guy who moms in Minneapolis will embrace, the one who, as he likes to say, you know, children love to sit on my lap now, Robin, and, you know, tell me how much they love me on AGT. So he then started to position himself as that guy, as well as being the world's greatest interviewer. And both parts are such a fallacy.
Does he actually, I've heard that he paints himself as sort of like a feminist now. Is that actually true?
Well, I mean, if you listen to our last podcast where he basically excoriates Wendy Williams because she did a 2-minute discussion about his new book called Howard Stern Comes Again. And 2 minutes, and basically said he's gone Hollywood. And that led into him tirading for about 45 minutes, calling her the C word, calling her transgendered. I don't know if she even has a penis. And he seems to be the only person left in America who's able to say these things with pure venom in his heart and get away with it.
Well,
and
I was gonna say, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. It just amazes us that he gets a pass. But subsequently, he's deleted that entire tirade from future recordings of the show. We love to call his show a podcast, but of the show on Sirius, the on demand now has that completely scrubbed.
Oh, so you can't even get a hold of it?
We can.
Okay,
but but no, if you're just listening to a replay on Sirius, you cannot. No.
Well, it's that Wendy Williams thing was like really out there to me when I saw it, because I was like, you know, I don't think her criticism was that harsh. She was like, I love Howard, but he's a star fucker now. He's gone, yeah. Hollywood. He's not for the people anymore. You know, he wants to hang out with like Jimmy Kimmel and Jennifer Aniston now. He's just not the same guy. And Howard Stern just went insane. He was like, you are nothing.
You'll never be me. You can't be me. You are a fly. You are E.T. You are, you know, you're Skeletor. You're bug-eyed. And he used the C word at least 15, 20 times on her. And it was quite shocking, actually. The day that it happened, I must have gotten like 4 or 5 texts from people on the website saying, did you just hear that Wendy rant? Did you just hear what went on? And I'm like, no, let me go back and play it. And then only to find that it had been scrubbed. So, of course, you know, the intrepid reporters on my site will always record anything that's horrific, and immediately uploaded it to me. And I heard it and was shocked. And then we went on a huge Twitter campaign, you know, just saying, hey, why isn't anybody paying attention to this? Why is he constantly getting a pass? Why is this so-called evolved feminist allowed to do this in the name of comedy, where pretty much nobody else can get away with it? I mean, the hypocrisy is amazing.
Well, I mean, the other thing was, I didn't find it comedic. I just thought it was like,
no.
It was like a temper tantrum from like a little boy who was like angry at his mom because his mom caught him stealing from the cookie jar.
Yeah. You know, he's the kind of guy, that personality to me is the guy who in you know, sixth grade, had no friends, you know, sat by himself at the lunch table. And then the family moves to a new school district. So now he can be anybody he wants, kind of like summer camp. You don't know anybody. You can be anybody you want. And then, you know, he started positioning himself as this new guy. So people started gravitating towards him. And he liked that attention. I mean, the best guest he ever got back in the day was like, you know, Dee Snider from Twisted Sister, or, you know, a C-list celebrity of some sort. But now that he's positioned himself as, you know, the world's greatest interviewer, and people want to come on the show on his terms, of course, you know, he now is this new man. But you know what? Deep down inside, he's really not. 20 years of therapy have done nothing to help him. Nothing.
Well, so what was it like back in the day when you were a Howard Stern fan? What drew you to Howard Stern's program? I guess it was on K-Rock, right? What was it that made it such a phenomenon?
So what made it great was that it was so irreverent. What made it great was that it wasn't, you know, just some man promoting whatever the top 40 music of the day was. You know, this was like a legitimate talk show for my age group, as opposed to, you know, my father listening to Wins News and hearing what the sports weather and time were before he went off to work. You know, this was something that you could just shove into your ears and listen to on your way to work, you know, whilst you're sitting at your desk. And it was really fun and funny. And the comedic talent that he had on there with Jackie and with Billy West and then subsequently Artie, you know, just made for so much fun. And you loved hearing about how his weekend was and what he did and, you know, who he hung out with and who he saw and then what Robin saw and, you know, where Robin went on vacation. And then all of a sudden, all of that just stopped. So when he got to Sirius, and we firmly believe that a good portion of people followed him to Sirius because of Artie and because Artie became the regular guy. So Howard became almost the elitist and Artie was the regular guy on the show. And everybody could associate with that. Plus, everybody wanted to hear Howard and crew say the word fuck. You know, this is something that we'd never heard in real time, in real life, on real radio. And so you wanted to hear them curse and be even more irreverent than they were. And it's made for such appealing content. It's kind of like a soap opera. You know, it's kind of like watching General Hospital for the last 20 years. You just know the characters, you know the players, you know their history, you know everything about their lives. And then all of a sudden that just dropped dead. And then Artie, of course, almost tried to kill himself, had to get fired, because he was a heroin addict. And then the decision was made that no more comedians would be in there. And also that Howard would be the one and only thing for everybody to focus on. And guess what? Once it became Howard, not quite as funny, not quite as interesting. And so that's when we all started to have this epic downfall on, God, you know, it's just not the same. And not that anybody expects, you know, naked girls riding on a, you know, masturbation tool in the office. Nobody expects that. The expectation, I think, was to just have something that really made us laugh. And it started to not make us laugh anymore. So when it became not quite that funny, that's when we decided, well, let's point out the hypocrisies that are going on that show now. Let's point out, you know, who he's become and, you know, how he tries to promote his wife as the Pia Zadora of the 2000s and how he tries to make her into something that she's not and make himself into this altruistic, amazing man that he has become. And it just doesn't work.
Well, you know, I wanted to talk about the switchover to Sirius. I mean, because I think he's sort of painted himself now as, you know, a good Democrat and whatnot. And I myself am to the left on things. So that's fine, whatever. But I mean, back then, wasn't he sort of positioning himself as like, I'm a libertarian and, you know, the FCC is just trying to censor me, you know, that kind of thing. When I don't really think that was necessarily the case. I think it was just that, you know, K-Rock had regulations they had to follow. It wasn't the FCC itself trying to like take down Howard Stern.
Agreed. Censorship was good for business. You know, being that guy on the radio and having, you know, that was a perfect case of bad publicity being good publicity. Because, you know, once the FCC is on your ass a little bit and it's in the newspapers and people are talking about it, I want to listen to Howard. Then all the syndications started to roll in because now everybody wants to listen to Howard. Everybody wants to hear what is so bad that he actually has a government entity coming down on his ass. Not that he ever had to pay anything out of pocket himself. It was all driven by the stations, and a lot of it was probably covered under their insurance policies and their clauses that they had with him. So it wasn't, you know, we now, in hindsight, don't believe anything that went on. Like, we believe that everything he did was manipulated so that they would come after him, so that it would increase ratings. Not that it was necessarily so. You never know. I don't know. You say you lean towards the left. I lean towards the right of the left. You know, I hate being called the liberal. You know, I don't fucking hug trees. I'm not, you know, out there screaming for people to save dolphins in fucking Japan. I just don't like this fucking guy that's in office. That end of story. So there's regardless, I long for George Bush, if that's even possible. But but he was never really a libertarian either. I think he fancies himself as a Democrat because many of the people he wants to be friends with are Democrats. I don't necessarily think in my heart that he is that guy. You know, he's a proud gun owner. He supports the Second Amendment. He has a concealed carry license permit, so he concealed carries all the time, which is why you always see him wearing a jacket. And he's firmly for gun control, yet, you know, he's for abortion. And he says he voted for Hillary, but, you know, I don't know. Maybe he was just angry at Donald Trump because Donald wasn't giving him any attention during the, you know, time period where he was running and Donald wouldn't call into the show. So you never know. You know, you never know what the truth is anymore.
Well, yeah. The other thing about Howard Stern that I've noticed when just looking back at Eclipse and whatnot, he seems to have what is more or less a victim complex, especially when he like talks about his parents and his childhood. It's like everything was so horrible, woe is me. And I think you guys have pushed back on that a little bit on Radio Gunk.
Yeah, it's all bullshit. I mean, he is a classic product of Jewish parents from Long Island, born in the, you know, 50s and early 60s. Those parents wanted everything for their children and more, and they gave it to them. And so Howard, you know, Howard may have grown up with black kids for a little while, but, you know, he moved in ninth grade to out of the town he was in and into Rockville Center, which was all white. And, you know, he even said in his books that the kid who beat him up was this Polish kid and not a black kid. And somehow it morphed into, you know, black kids were beating the shit out of me. And that's why we had to leave, because I begged my mother to get us out of there. You know, he got everything handed to him. His father paid for his schooling. He bought him a car. He paid for his, you know, first apartment when he got out of college. He did everything he possibly could for him. And when he got his first job, probably his second job, he was making what would be equal to about $125,000 in today's money. So he's never had it bad. He's never had it bad. And this weird psychosis that he has for his parents really confounds us, because he was given everything a child could possibly want and more. And yeah, maybe he had a dad who wasn't home all the time, but you know what? He worked really hard for his money and paid for you to go through school and your sister to both go through college and afford a lifestyle that they did not necessarily have. So they sacrificed for him, and he basically rips them a new asshole for it, which is weird to us.
Well, yeah, there's just a lot of weirdness about him. Like, the whole thing of his reinvention, is just this swell guy now. I mean, it's always confused me.
Did you just use the word swell? Such a swell guy. Well, I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I was going to say, it's just, the reinvention to me is weird because just things I've heard from, like, the older days of the Howard Stern show, like the his interviews where he had the Iron Sheik on, which, wow. I thought that stuff was like really a train wreck. And I felt bad for the Iron Sheik, even though I guess it gave him publicity. And the other thing that always like really threw me off was when he had that girl from Different Strokes on.
Oh, Dana Plato. He absolutely killed her. He is partially responsible. We firmly believe that he is firmly responsible partially responsible for her death. She killed herself the very next day.
Yeah, she came on the show and people just kept calling in.
He allowed calls to come through. It's not the people called in. It's just, it's that, you know, he sees on his little monitor, you know, somebody really basically wants to rip Dana a new asshole, or somebody wants to tell Dana about her drug habits, or somebody wants to, and he allowed those phone calls through. That's what happened. Not that they called in and he just arbitrarily picked up. He knows what every caller is going to say before he picks up on them.
Okay, so they're all screened. Yeah.
Of course. Of course. So he allowed that to happen. Like he allowed an Artie to be a heroin addict and fall asleep whilst the show was on live and, you know, just be laughed at because of his addiction. Or insist that Hank the angry drunken dwarf drink on air so that he'd be even more drunk to be even more funny for the show. So things like that, you know, it's almost like a bullying tactic that he has.
Well, the Dana thing was so weird because, like, you know, she just started breaking down on air. She was crying and whatnot. And he's like, well, I think you guys are being really mean to her. And it's like, well, why'd you let him call in?
Of course, you didn't have to take phone calls. If you'll notice, and as the show has progressed and, quote, evolved, he does not take calls whilst anybody is in studio anymore. But, you know, if he has a guest star on, regardless of how A-list or D-list they are, the calls do not get through. So he no longer takes a phone call. And that used to be part of the show. You know, you looked forward to people calling in and either loving the person or absolutely saying, you know, you guys suck. And so it's just a really curious thing that happened to the show. But yes, I absolutely, absolutely think he's responsible for, or partially responsible for her killing herself. We actually should do a whole show on that. I don't know why we haven't.
Well, I think it indicates, like, I mean, there is a lot of parallels between Howard Stern and pro wrestling. Maybe that's why there was such a connection to it in the 90s, because I mean, even though Howard Stern is sort of a mega celebrity now, I mean, the Howard Stern show, like pro wrestling, was always sort of a carny huckster freak show in a lot of ways.
That's exactly right. So you brought in characters. You know, there was a cast of characters, and they all had a role to play in the way the sport went down, right? So you had your marks, you had your, you know, superheroes. Gosh, I mean, you've had in wrestling guys who've gone on to be absolute superstars in acting and in doing all sorts of different things. But everybody knows that it's not real. The difference is that you thought or you think or you want to think that everything that goes on the Stern Show is in fact real. That's the difference. Even though we kind of feel like it's fake. So the parallels stop there because you know in wrestling, you know what you're getting. You know you're getting some a script where it's fun and it's something you can follow along with. With this, you thought it was real, but as that veil begins to lift off of him, and, you know, we always love to give it the synonym of like the Emperor's New Clothes. You know, he thinks that he's still this real guy, but we all know that he's not.
Well, I mean, I've heard rumors that he doesn't even write most of his material. That the stuff from back in the day was written by a lot of other people, a lot of the jokes and whatnot. And you can tell that things have changed since a lot of people like Stuttering John and Artie have moved on.
Jackie, you know, Jackie would just throw papers at him. You know, he'd write something really quickly, crumple it up, throw it at him. And then immediately Howard would say it. You could always tell a Jackie joke because Jackie would laugh at it before Howard even started to say it because he thought it was something really, really funny. Basically, the way the show works now is he does 112 shows a year, 3 days a week, 4 hours a day, and has 70 people working in the back office. 70.
He's taking it easy.
Oh, no shit. He's phoning it in. So now he relies on, you know, a shit ton of other people who aren't funny to carry the day. And now he has something called the panel, which we joke about constantly. So he brings in, you know, various miscreants from the back office to now be the brunt of the jokes. And now they can have internal fights and they can be the ones who argue with each other. And so now, correct, he's now the 64, you know, probably just about to go on to Medicare. And he's now just phoning it in and still making $90 million a year.
$90
million. It's amazing. It's amazing.
My God.
Yeah. 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 So man of the people, my ass, Wendy Williams was 100% correct. You know, no man of the people goes out and buys a mansion in Palm Beach for $56 million cash and visits it maybe six times a year, maybe for like a week. I mean, it's just insanity. So he's wealthier than most of the people he longs to accept him.
Was there anything with regards to, I've always suspected that a lot of people that worked for him really, really got burned by him. And I've heard different things, but I don't know all the unpleasant details, so to speak.
Give me an example. Like who? Like what?
You mentioned Artie, that his drug problems kept getting worse, and that I've heard that Stern sort of fueled that. I don't know if that's true. It just seems like he could be a very exploitative person.
Well, that's a given. I mean, unfortunately, with Artie, you know, nothing changed after he left the show. So it's not really Howard's fault that Artie, you know, sank even into even worse despair than was evident while he was on the show. You know, he joined with he had another show for a little while, and then he joined the Kumia. He had his own podcast for a couple of years. Then he joined the Anthony Cumia podcast, and couldn't even do that. Couldn't even do, you know, 2 hours a couple of days a week. Couldn't get it together to get his shit together to do that. And so now, you know, here he is in drug jail or wherever he is. Hopefully, you know, getting clean and sober. I worry about how long that will last, but we did probably one of the last interviews with him before. Actually, we did an interview with him the day before he went into court to get tested for drugs, and he happened to have had cocaine in his system. But he was coherent. He was funny. You know, he was really kind of amusing. And I loved that he, you know, was friendly with us. And, you know, I would text back and forth with him and see if he was okay. And, you know, then all of a sudden I get a text from some guy saying, yeah, hey, this is so-and-so and, you know, Artie's in jail. And so he's not going to be using this phone for a while. And that was that, you know, that was that.
Well, you've had quite a few Stern regulars on your show. Maybe you could tell my listeners about some of the guests you've had on. I know you had Stuttering John on recently. I enjoyed your interview with Nicole Bass, being that I was a wrestling fan. So
I love Nicole. Can I tell you, Nicole and I became really, really good friends. And I would speak to Nicole probably every other day for about an hour or 2 hours. And, you know, she made her final appearance on the Stern show probably about, you know, and I'm probably wrong on this, but I would say about 4 or 5 months before she passed away. And she had always had like some heart issues and she had some problems. And she would cry to me on the phone about how she needed to get back into shape. She needed to be, you know, the person she was. And it, you know, one of the sad problems with people like Nicole and many others that have been on that show is that 15 minutes that you garner from being on that show is very, very, very hard to replicate. Very hard, you know. And I would say to Nicole all the time, Nicole, I have friends in like this business or that business, and you know, maybe you can make some appearances, or maybe you can be a bodyguard, or maybe you can do. And you know, nothing was quite good enough for who she felt she needed to be. You know, so her last appearance on the show was kind of sad. She looked kind of shitty. And it was just sad all around. Honestly, I felt really, really terrible for her. And, you know, she had been booted out of her apartment. She was living in the back of a deli, some friends of hers that owned some restaurant or coffee shop or whatever. And she had nothing. She had nothing left. And I feel like she died very sadly. It hurts me. It hurts me to this day that I I feel like I could have helped her, but maybe you can't. You know, I'm not necessarily sure. I'm not sure. So yeah, who else? So yeah, John. Matter of fact, I'm going to be doing John's show, I think tonight or tomorrow. I'm going on his show. I love him. I think he's a great guy. I know a lot of people can't stand him, but I think he's super smart. And I think he's an incredible manipulator and knows what he's doing. Steve Grillo, really good friend of mine. I see him all the time. He's actually probably the person I'm closest with of that whole crew. Tim Sabian, who used to be the senior VP for Howard's show, and now he's SVP, I think, at Westwood One. So he and I are, he and I are great friends. And, you know, I've tried on more than one occasion to pull something together where I could do a podcast, you know, weekly, a couple times a week, and, you know, finally do something that's actually, you know, real. But then I feel beholden to someone, and I can't do that. I can't be dictated to at this point in life. Who else? Gosh, I mean, Gary Garver, who, you know, used to do a lot of these like make-believe scam phony phone calls into the show. I can't even remember anymore. So many of the Jackie the Joke Man, whom I love. I see him all the time also. He hangs out with Grillo a lot, so we're pretty good friends. You know, and then that crew. And then there's a couple of people from Howard TV who I'm kind of friendly with. And, you know, they'll come on the show, but they'll come on under the guise of another name or a nom de plume, if you will. And,
Derp Throat.
Oh, Derp Throat was the best. Derp Throat was the best. I love him. I always, you know, we always chat about different bullshit that's going on the show. And a couple of the guys are like that. So it's fun to be friendly with them as well. And yeah, you know, it's all 6 degrees of separation. I don't even give a shit, really. It's just, it's fun to have friends with, be friends with them, but you know, they'll tell me stuff all the time, but I would never throw it out on the air. I would never kind of reveal it. I would never say anything because, you know, if they take me into their confidence about something that happened on the show or something that they believe to be true about, it's not my place to have it come out there unless they choose to say it out loud. So I feel like I've built a good relationship with them because of that and because I don't betray their confidences or you know, what they want to say. And if they do want something to be out there, I make sure that I get it out there. I have my best friend is this guy, Xavier, who runs the forum with me. And he does this incredibly stupid voice called Mr. Whiskers. And Mr. Whiskers is basically our drug-addled cat who's usually in rehab, who always has dirt on people. So if we ever want to reveal something that we know to be true, Mr. Whiskers will be the one to tell you. And he has never been wrong. Never, ever, ever, ever been wrong. Everything he says is very verifiable and very true and told to me by somebody very close to the source. So we love that. We love doing that.
Well, you know, I was going to say, I think the thing that, and maybe this is just my like bleeding heart millennial social justice guy coming out, but I think the thing that has always made me a little bit queasy about Howard Stern is there's like two types of people that get their 15 minutes of fame out of it. I think someone like Stuttering John has parlayed it into a form of success. And then I look at other people like Nicole, who I think once that 15 minutes of fame was gone, it's like, what do you do? And, you know, I feel like a lot of people that are involved in that quote unquote freak show sort of freaks and geeks environment don't make it out as well as others.
No, of course they don't. I mean, how can they? You know, there's a tremendous difference between somebody who, you know, verifiably can put on their resume that they worked for the Howard Stern show and somebody who's a peripheral character on the show who either just calls in or comes on, you know, infrequently. You know, look at Elephant Boy. That's a great example. Or Jeff the Drunk or High Pitch Eric, any of them. You know, that ability to parlay your success of being a peripheral character on a very successful show is very hard to do.
Which is weird because they're what makes the show in a lot of ways.
Of course it is. Of course it is. They are the mechanism that drives that show. But, you know, like we love to say, they are purely content. They're not paid. They're not, you know, for the most part, hopefully not too scripted. But, you know, their ability to bring content to a show where the man gets paid over $3,000 a minute to be on that show. They provide a ton of content without any remuneration whatsoever. And so in order to get something out of it, of course, you know, of course they'll go and do some local bar and get paid for it and try to exploit it as much as they can. But really, how much can you exploit it? I mean, how much do you really want to hear a podcast by Jeff the Angry Drunk? You know, all you want to do is look at him fall down, passed out, drunk, stoned, and stupid, you know, and make fun of him. So it's not really a working model for future employment.
Isn't that the difference between, like, what the peripheral people are called? Don't they call them the Whack Pack on the show? And then there's the people that are the actual staffers.
Correct. So the Whack Pack are basically just callers and, you know, various and sundry miscreants who have latched onto the show over the course of years. Most of them have some sort of defect. Most of them have some sort of mental or physical retardation. And they are used as fodder to enhance the show. And we have we almost have a hard and fast rule on our show that we tend to not really talk about them at all. You know, we have no interest in the Whack Pack at all. None. Marianne from Brooklyn every once in a while, just because she's so fucking obnoxious and, you know, just such an incredible sycophantic fan that it shocks and amazes you that she won't throw herself off of, you know, the Brooklyn Bridge when he's off air, because she'll have nothing to live for anymore. Or Bobo, who calls in from Florida, you know, what will they have to latch onto once this show is gone? You know, they are like the barnacles on this giant whale. They're not even the feeder fish. They're the fucking barnacles that just kind of cling to him until, you know, he finally scrapes them off, which will be when he retires.
You know, I think this is an interesting segue, because I've noticed if a person goes to the, you know, Howard Stern subreddit, there are like 1,000,001 threads with a title like, why does Radio Gunk obsess over Howard Stern, and why do they hate him so much? Why are they haters?
You guys are such fucking assholes. You know, I don't understand why you listen to the show. Just, you know, he's a brilliant man. He's a fantastic person. It's like, yeah, okay. You know, think what you want, but thanks for listening. You know, I mean, what do you want me to say? You know, these opinions are our own. If you don't agree with them, you have every right to tell us you don't agree with them. And if you do agree with them, then by all means, let us know that too. I don't care. I don't give a shit that you still love him. I don't care that he's still on the air. I don't care when he retires. I don't care. You know, it's we do it for fun. We're not, you know, we're not in it for anything other than to mock and be a little piece of sand in that beautiful oyster that he has perfected of his life. That's all. Just a little grain of sand. That's all. I love that. I never go on Reddit, so I have no idea what goes on there. I mean, unless somebody tells me something like offensive is happening on there, I would never. That to me is a cesspool. At least on my forum, I can control the nastiness and how much people bitch. But you know what? Even there, I don't care. If you want to pick on, you know, how we interrupted Artie during the segment, okay. Okay, we did. You're right. That's good. It's a learning curve. I'll never forget Grillo the first time he came on, and you know, I had these horrible trolls coming after me, and he's like, Monique, I'm just telling you, you cannot have a thin skin. You need fucking dragon skin to be able to deal with these people, because you forget that the people that listen to you are the same people who listen to Howard. Therefore, they are the aggressive, you know, alpha male type, I don't give a shit guys. That's who you
have. Well, he's behind a keyboard. I don't know about in real life.
Oh, No, 100%. I mean, you know, I don't know any of these people. I would say maybe four or five people on my entire forum have I ever met or interacted with ever. They've all wound up being wonderful people. But as a general rule, yeah, I mean, I whatever. You can be whoever you want to be behind your keyboard. I don't care.
What is it about Stern that inspires such a sycophantic followers? I don't get it.
It's kind of crazy.
He looks like a weird looking dude to me.
He is kind of creepy, and he knows that, you know. Well, though he's had like a multitude of plastic surgeries, as we're aware, I don't know. It's just like asking me, you know, who are these people, you know, that came out of the woodwork to vote for Trump. You know, who some people on my forum, I would say it's a 60-40 split of pro-Trump versus against him. And they get into fights constantly about it. And I'm like, who are you people? You know, and a lot of them, and they know who they are if they ever hear this, but a lot of them, you know, it was their first time even voting. And they came out to vote for Trump. And I guess, you know, in his world, you know, you create an environment where people who love sex talk and love talking about boobs and love, you know, being like a guy's guy and being that kind of person, you know, that's who you gain as your listening baseline, you know. And so the demographic for my show is almost the same as what the demographic would be for his show back in, you know, 2000, and not today's show. But definitely then. And so these same guys who are now in their, you know, late 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, they're still the same guy. They didn't change. Howard did, you know, so that's the difference. They never changed. I mean, most people don't, you know, he just happened to reinvent himself into this new person. And nobody really appreciates that. So that's why they listen.
And now doesn't he do like spots with like Ellen DeGeneres now and whatnot? Could you tell my listeners just how much he has changed, I guess?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So let's see. So much. I mean, Ellen, he basically used to rip her a new asshole. And then once he found out that Ellen was willing to invite his wife on his show, on her show, he then was like, oh, well, you know, Ellen's a great girl. Love to have her on. Lena Dunham, which is classic. You know, he used to watch girls and be like, oh my gosh, she's such a fat, disgusting pig. How could anybody want to see her naked? It's disgusting. And she called him out on it and was like, Howard, you know, go fuck yourself. This is who I am. And, you know, I'm sorry that you feel that way, but I love you. I think you're great. And then he has her in and he's like, oh my God, I love your show. I love everything about it. And never, ever bringing up the fact that horrible, disgusting, fat animal. You know, and I mean, and this is a constant. I mean, he used to rip Jennifer Aniston a new asshole, completely asexual, has nothing about her that's appealing, you know, and then all of a sudden finds out Justin Theroux is a fan of his, and Jimmy Kimmel actually invited him and Beth to come to Mexico with them and stay with them with the Anistons. And then all of a sudden, you know, Jennifer and Justin are really good friends, and apparently Jennifer called him or Justin called him and said, dude, you know, if you're going to be friends with us, you really can't talk about, you know, who we are or what we did or what we're doing on air.
So he himself is a sycophant.
Yes, of course he is. Of course he is. That's the beauty of it. That's the interesting, amazing dichotomy of it, that he is the sycophant to A stars, but he makes more than, you know, probably 20 of his friends combined on a yearly basis. You know, he's this multi-millionaire who basically is, you know, the gawky, gunky, skinny, nerdy kid who nobody really wants to be friends with, honestly. You know, so if he gets a friend, you know, he's all over it. Like Jimmy Kimmel's like, you know, complete fanboy, you know, loves hanging out with Howard. And he's the one I think is responsible for getting Howard into this other grouping of society that actually wants to talk to him. But I think the reality is that Howard's probably very boring in real life. You know, just goes to bed early, doesn't really do much of anything, goes out to eat at like 4:30 in the afternoon. You know,
Well, I was going to say you can see it in the way he talks about things. Like, just the way he talks, you almost feel like you're listening to some dude that is reliving his high school glory days constantly.
Yes, that's exactly right. And he lives in the past. You know, do you know he worked at his camp that he went to as a kid? He worked at his camp well into college, almost like I think when he graduated college, he was still working at Camp Wellmet because that was his glory time. You know, he was then able to go back to camp and be like, you know, super cool dude to all these like 14-year-olds because now he's like the seasoned master. And it's just so silly to us. It's just, you know, it's just, I cannot wait for the new book to come out. We cannot wait to rip it apart. It's really the thing I'm looking forward to the most. You know, people are like, oh my God, you guys are so obsessed with him. You know, you got to get over this shit. It's crazy, blah, blah, blah. But in reality, we do maybe a show a week or every 2 weeks for 3 or 4 hours. And that's it. You know, we're hardly obsessed. You know, we just, when there's something to talk about, we'll, you know, gather the troops, send out the signal, the bat signal to everybody and say, you know, we got to get on this like this week. And that's what we do. So it's, you know, it's not quite as set in stone as people like to think we are. We're not that obsessed. We do have lives.
Well, I mean, there's always a lot of fun stuff to cover with Howard Stern. I mean, like you said, he has a new book coming out. I guess it's his first in like 2 decades now. Or...
Well, that's so. According to the PR that came out on it, yes, it's the first book in 20 years, which we found very funny since he never mentioned that when he did the announcement of the book. And we love the fact that one of our guys found the book online the day before. And so we were able to debut it on our forum and show everybody what the cover looked like and what it was called and when it was being released. And, you know, it was kind of like one of those, ha, 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 you know, we got to you before you were able to make the announcement. But in reality, all it is a look into his favorite interviews and, you know, what he liked, what he disliked about them and who his favorite interview was and who his least favorite was and some insight onto his process of how he interviews people. So basically all he had to do was get transcripts from the interviews and then make some commentary about them and take some pictures. So 2 years in the making, the book is already, let's see, it came out at $35 as a hardcover, number one bestseller for that day. And then dropped behind a vegetable cookbook like 2 days later. And also the price dropped from $35 to like $21. So it's, I don't know.
Well, that's a grift. That's a grifter type thing.
Totally.
At least in a book like that.
Totally. But you know what? It's just like CDs used to be. You know, it became so cheap to make CDs versus records. And then it became so cheap to just do digital output versus CDs. So if you sell CDs nowadays, it's just really an afterthought to the digital download, you know, because that's where you make your money. If you're doing a digital download for $16.99, you've already made your money off of the book and the download is costing you a penny to just transfer the file. So it's pretty much a scam, I think.
Well, you know, there were just a few more things I wanted to cover.
Yeah.
I guess you mentioned that he has fans that are sycophantic and will call him a genius. Hasn't there been like a whole thing about like him giving IQ tests to the staff? I don't know anything about that stuff, but what is the whole obsession some fans have with like intelligence quotients?
So you know, or you may not know, that we call him 99.
I remember hearing you say that on the show. This is why I asked about it.
Yes. Okay. So apparently somebody had revealed that he took a test one time and his IQ came out to be 99. So, and not that that's a terrible IQ or not that that's an amazing IQ. He's just in the middle of the road because don't forget when he went to college, he had to basically go to 13th and 14th grade because he actually couldn't get into Boston University's actual programs. So he had to go to remedial classes in order to get his grades up so that he could be admitted into the communication school. So, you know, he's never been the smartest boy. But notice that neither him nor Robin nor Fred have ever taken an IQ test, yet they love giving it to the staff. They love, you know, comparing them. They love comparing the staff IQs to, you know, Wendy the Retard's IQ or something like that. And he uses this as a gauge for who he thinks is intelligent and who's not on the staff. Yet we all know he's probably the least intelligent of them all. But listen, not so unintelligent that he couldn't make $90 million a year. So I'm not, you know, I'm not knocking it by any stretch. But we do love calling him 99. His whole entity of being is and his wealth is completely based on being able to have, you know, an amazing agent in Don Buchwald, who has negotiated the most ridiculous contracts for this man.
Well, he just got renewed again, right?
No. He's on his last 5 years right now. I think he has like 2 years left in his contract. And then Sirius has the rights to all of his old shows, including his old shows from K-Rock and the likes. They have the rights to those shows for, I think, another 5 years. I'm sure somebody else will correct me on that. But they have the rights to those shows. So what they'll do is if Howard does retire, you know, maybe they'll try and make a deal with some of his guys to stay on, which I can't even imagine why we would care about that. And or maybe do kind of like a Sternthology, which is something that they currently do, where they play old shows. But what they do with that is that they've basically eliminated Artie or Jackie or, you know, anybody who's no longer with the show is completely eliminated from the replays of said shows. So it'll be interesting to see what happens after the next 2 years are up. I can hardly imagine that he wants to go away quietly. I don't see it happening.
Do you think he's getting ready to ride off into the sunset? Or no?
I can't imagine. I think when he finally does retire, he will be very much like Howard Hughes. You know, you'll never see him again. He'll just grow old and crotchety. And, you know, somebody will have like some grainy picture with their, you know, 2000 times lens showing him in his wheelchair with a little blanket over his lap or some shit, you know, and he'll ride off into the sunset that way. But I'm not necessarily sure he's ready to do that. I think he wants to have a new contract. I think Sirius still has the money to give to him, and they are the worst run company in America. But what else do they have? You know, that this is their draw. This is the feather in the Sirius cap. So until they start to spread their wings a little bit, horrible, horrible purchase of Pandora, by the way. But once they start to spread their wings a little bit, maybe they don't need him anymore. I don't know.
Well, you never know. Maybe in 5 years he'll end up on that. There's this new project coming out called Luminary, which is going to be the Netflix of podcasting. I think Jimmy Kimmel is there, actually. Maybe Jimmy Kimmel will get him a job there. I don't know.
You know what? I think Howard would love for Netflix to give him a shit ton of money, as they have been throwing money at everybody. Give him a shit ton of money to do something maybe similar to what David Letterman is doing, where he just picks and chooses the people that he wants to interview and does some sort of interview show. Unfortunately, because David Letterman has already done this, I'm not necessarily sure he would like to follow suit with what he does. And I also don't think that he can carry a show by himself. You know, they're all very much a dysfunctional family of sorts. You know, one time Howard had to go to the bathroom like a year ago or so, and he's, I really have to go. And he literally just walked out while they were still on air before cutting to commercial. And Robin and Fred just sat there in utter silence. Like they didn't even know what to say by themselves. And it was kind of embarrassing and also humiliating at the same time. It's like, holy shit, you two have been on the air for over 30 years. How can you not carry on a conversation without Howard there? You know, I find it amazing. But yeah, he is the battery that runs that clock. And without him, they are nothing. Nothing.
Wow.
That's my opinion.
What are some of the other characters within the Stern orbit? Like, I know you've covered some of the other characters, like especially Robin, I guess her book you guys did a big expose of.
Kind of did, yeah. You know, we had a lot of controversy with that as well. I had to almost start deleting YouTube comments because people were getting really mean about our opinions on things. And, you know, now I've decided I will no longer delete comments. You know, whatever you want to say, I don't give a shit. But people are like, how dare you say that she wasn't abused? You know, this is what she remembers. This is what she believes to be true. And, you know, you guys suck for thinking that she would be lying about this. And And again, and as we said, you know, these opinions are our own. This is not based on any, you know, factual information we have, any anecdotal information. This is just how we feel. And we feel this way because the following: she is incredibly narcissistic. She needed some pull to make that book be interesting. You know, she's very haughty. She's very full of herself. She almost borders on crazy. You know, we did a reading club. That's how this all started. So we did a Radio Gunk reading book club on our site, and people would follow along. Okay, now we're up to chapters 5 and 6, and then we would read chapters 5 and 6 and come out with thoughts and opinions on what she said in the book. And so we absolutely dissected that thing. Yeah, we podcasted that day for over 7.5 hours.
Wow.
Straight through. I think we took like a little snack break and that was it. And then I broke it up into 2 days of podcasts. But it was really eye-opening to see how they portrayed themselves and how she portrays herself as being, you know, just this wonderful, wonderful human being. And actually, the weird case of the fact of the matter is that nobody on staff or ex-staff has a bad word to say about her. Nobody.
Hmm.
So because we say bad things about her, everybody ripped into us. You know, you're just horrible human beings. You're horrible, horrible people to think this about Robin. And I stand by feeling that, you know, yes, I believe that something did happen to her. I don't think that it was as bad as how she portrays it. And I feel like her laughing about it as she gets older and then in turn also laughing at people who would come on the show and talk about abuse belies her truth somehow, you know, that she doesn't stand up for somebody who would come on the show and say that they were abused. It's weird to me.
Well, you know, I want to get into the whole Trump Stern thing, because that's been in the news since like, you know, the past few years since Trump got in office.
Yeah.
But before that, I wanted to say something, because I find it odd how people that love Howard Stern hate on Radio Gunk. Because as far as I can tell, what you guys are saying is that Howard Stern is kind of a scumbag. And then on the other hand, Howard Stern himself, in responding to Wendy Williams, says, "I am a scumbag. I've always been a scumbag." What is the disagreement here? It sounds like you guys actually both agree that Howard Stern is a scumbag. Even Howard Stern agrees.
Yeah, but nobody wants to hear it. You know, it's easy for him to say. It's easy for us to say. But, and you know what? Again, I don't pay attention to anything that people say about us on other forums or in other venues, other areas, because who cares? But yeah, so, okay. So this is how we feel. And we don't care how you feel. And if you want to believe that he's that man that, you know, that was great and glory, but, you know, it's like believing that Tyson could get into the ring today and beat the shit out of, you know, any comer at him. Well, he probably could. But, you know, the glory that was like a Mike Tyson is no longer. He's just kind of an old guy with a lot of tattoos who bit somebody's fucking ear off. So, you know, you can think about the 90s Mike Tyson and be amazed by what a powerhouse pit bull he was, you know, but that's not so much who he is now. And you only see that Mike from the 90s. And I think that's the problem with a lot of people that are still truly true fans of his. You know, like our tagline always is, we listen so that you don't have to. And so most of the people that listen to our show do not listen to him anymore. You know, so we are the eyes and ears for a show that they used to love. And then we just point out the hypocrisies of what used to be there. Now, going back to Trump, we find that whole thing to be really interesting, because right before he started to run, I believe it was right around the time where he announced he was running and when all the shit came out about what he used to say on Howard, all of the Trump Howard tapes that were on YouTube, which there were tons, were all scrubbed from YouTube basically everything was scrubbed from the internet. But then all of a sudden, miraculously, you know, all these media outlets have tons of tape of what he used to say on the Stern Show. And I firmly believe, and I think, you know, most of the people I do the show with would agree with me, that he was the one who released all those tapes to the media. He was the one responsible for getting that information out there, because he knew it would be good for business. Regardless of what it was that Donald said, it would be good for Howard business. And that's why the information was released. So my feeling is that the reason Trump never called in, even though you would think one would think he would, because they were such good friends, they went to each other's respective weddings, and he never did. And so I believe that he believes, Trump, that Howard was the one who released all those tapes, and that's why he no longer talks to him. So that's kind of my theory, and I'm going to run with it. I see many parallels between the two of them. I think that Howard, you know, lies and we believe it just because he says it, so therefore it must be true. I think he, you know, takes a chapter out of the Trump, if I say it enough times, then it must be true, book of belief. And I think they have a lot of New York parallel wealthy men syndrome, you know, that what they say is what you need to believe, and therefore, you know, that is gospel, and that is it. So I think that they have a lot of parallels in that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know when those tapes got leaked, you know, Howard Stern was like, you know, all this stuff that Trump says, it's not just locker room talk. Like, that's horrible for him to say, grab him by the pussy. That's over the line. But then he'll say about Wendy Williams, he'll be dropping C-bombs everywhere. I mean, they're not that dissimilar.
They're not that dissimilar. Well, but the funny thing is that he's tried for many, many years to now, you know, be this new piece of friggin' Play-Doh that is a new, better version of the egg that he used to be, right? So now he's taken this Play-Doh that used to be an egg and he's pulled it apart and he's made it into like this new form. And then all of a sudden he comes out with this horrible, horrible Wendy Williams tirade, and it just gets smashed and it just goes right back to that friggin' egg that it used to be before. So everything that he has said, everything that he has, you know, banked on as being, you know, who he's going to be as he rides off into the sunset, was just completely and utterly destroyed by his tirade. And all of that was completely off the cuff. Certainly the first like 20-25 minutes of it were. I have the entire transcript on my website for people to read. I literally took 2.5 hours, 3 hours almost that morning, transcribing the entire thing into verbiage text so that we could read it on the air, because I knew that if I had played the original, it would have been scrubbed immediately. So, you know, he really just blew it. He fucking blew it, at idiot. but what you see from that is that's who he really is. That's the real guy right there. That's the guy who's tried to put on this incredible, you know, new feminist evolved man. That's who he really is.
I don't know. I just find it weird, that whole transformation, because to me it's like he'll be saying stuff about how he thinks Me Too is a good thing, and then he'll interview a woman and be invasively asking about like what her favorite sex positions are or what her breast,
you know,
size is.
It's worse than that. It's worse than that, because he doesn't do that to women anymore. He almost exclusively does it to men. So all of a sudden, the guy who used to be such a misogynistic asshole has become, you know, he talks about cock on a constant basis. Like, he always asks people how big their cocks are. He always wants to know if like somebody was pictured naked in the National Enquirer, if we could find the actual picture of it so that we can see how big Orlando Bloom's penis is. You know, they are constantly doing like gay antics on the show. There are never women on the show getting naked, only guys, ever, for at least the last 5 years.
I guess he thinks that's progressive now.
How could that be progressive if all your how does that appeal to your demographic? How does that appeal to Mac the trucker who's going across country right now listening to Sirius in his rig in Minneapolis? Like, how is this appealing to him to know that, you know, Sal is slapping his balls on Richard's face And this is supposed to be hysterical because Richard's doing a taste test with his ass on trying to discern what if it's a Pinot Noir or a Cabernet with his asshole. Like, how is this something that people want to hear? He had a month called Cocktober year before last, actually. It got so we beat the shit out of them so much about it, he didn't do it again this year. But Cocktober was huge. And so every day he had some new, you know, gay choir in that were all naked for George Takei. You know, just you know, who has the biggest penis, who has the smallest penis, who has the worst penis story. It was just all cock all the time. And it was just, you know, we were all kind of sort of repulsed by it. It was like, enough, you know, enough. We don't want to hear this. So, yeah, that guy, the... You know, the guy who would paint women's breasts for St. Patrick's Day, completely gone. We don't even know who this guy is, really. We don't. It's frightening.
Well, you know, the Trump thing, if we can start wrapping up on that, because I think it's really interesting. He was friends with Trump. Do you think that friendship broke apart just due to Howard Stern seeing the writing on the wall of, oh, fuck, this guy, it's like offending everyone in the... In the, you know, U.S., I got to break off from this guy just for my own sake.
No, I think that Howard's only as good as his last conversation with an ultra-liberal friend. I think he has lots of conversations whilst he's hanging out in his house in the Hamptons with a lot of his friends who are holier than thou, you know, which I can't even imagine, by the way, with that college scandal. I can't even imagine, you know, another 100 people are going to come out of the woodwork, people that we know that are just going to get busted in this whole thing. And I snicker inside. I laugh just thinking about this. But I think that he just listens to people and formulates an opinion based on somebody else's opinion, not necessarily his own. You know, the only opinions that he has that are definitely his are his right to own and bear guns, because he is a Second Amendment guy. And, you know, and then he'll come out with something about Mexico and building the wall and what the fuck is wrong with these people and why do we need a wall and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, it never really has been something that you've ever expounded upon. So I can't even imagine where this is coming from. Don't even really understand why you're bringing this up. But I firmly believe that a lot of his opinions, good, bad, or indifferent, are only said and only meant to have a little PR sheet sent out on it so that they can say, you know, Howard Stern stands firm against Donald Trump regarding the wall, or Howard Stern is with Trump on the, you know, Second Amendment. Like, I think he only does these things so that he can get publicity for his show, period. I don't really think that he has firm opinions on anything.
It's funny because I think that's another comparison you can make to Trump, right? I mean, you're sort of saying that Howard Stern is like a sponge when it comes to what he thinks.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Donald Trump, it's come out many times. People have said, you know, it's weird. Donald Trump just said this on Twitter in his latest speech. And that's what they were talking about last night on Fox and Friends. It's almost like Trump himself is like a sponge.
Well, Donald Trump is a Republican in sheep's clothing. You know, he's a Democrat in sheep's clothing. He's never been a Republican. He's never given a shit about the religious right or abortion or any of these fucking things. You know, he is your classic. And listen, as New Yorkers born and raised, you know, we all knew him for the huckster that he is. All of us.
New York has always hated him. There was like a big thing in the 80s, Spy magazine, a satire magazine, did like a whole like story on his bankruptcies. And I've always heard that Trump has been sore about that ever since then. He's not well liked in New York.
He's not well liked. You know, everybody knows that he's just a douchebag fucking real estate guy who went bankrupt, period. You know, and then he's all gaudy and glitzy and everything's all gold and like disgusting. You know, you think it's friggin' Versailles. I mean, it's just he could not be more hated in New York if he tried. But we all know him. We've known him our whole lives. We grew up with him. You know, he's always donated to the Democratic Party. He's actually always donated to the party that's going to help him get permits, let's be honest. But, you know, so he's never been firm on any side of a discussion. So it's shocking and amazing to me that he would come out as this bizarrely conservative-ish Republican guy who lies every friggin' day and who wants to grab women by the pussy and who cheated on his wife when she just gave birth to a baby. But, you know, the religious right is okay with it. It's just, it's fascinating to me. It's really an amazing case study. You know, it'll go down in the history books as like an amazing case study in the history of the United States. Seriously.
I mean, I don't know. Trump also has that similarity with Stern where I think Trump is like he's a very low self-esteem guy. Like he's the type of guy that is like, you know, look, I have a gold plated toilet, you know, right. Look at my big private jet. Yeah. And I feel like, that Stern is similar in that way too.
No, Stern will never tell you that he has a jet. Stern will never tell you that sometimes he takes a helicopter out to the Hamptons so that he doesn't have to sit in traffic. Stern will never tell you he paid $56 million cash for his house in Palm Beach. Stern will never tell you that he spent another $13 million just building a freaking closet for his wife's clothing. You know, he will never tell you that he doesn't drive, neither does she, that he has help, that he has people that cook for him or make things for him or buy things for him. He will never tell you that because he really doesn't want to alienate you as his listener who he knows has substantially less than he does. Whereas Trump knows that his reputation is almost built on people being aspirational. Versus it's almost the exact opposite. You know, these are aspirational people versus people that he knows probably would look down upon him if he told them that he has a bowling alley in the Hamptons in his home. You know, I mean, just like crazy things like that. And so he no longer tells us anything about his personal life, whereas Trump loves telling us about who he is and what he has. Because he thinks that people appreciate that because, you know, he's the apprentice. He's that guy. He's a, you know, multimillionaire businessman who is here to make us great again. So how about those coal jobs? Yay, coal.
Well, I guess what I mean is there's a better way of putting it. I think they both have narcissistic qualities and a need for validation. Like, I always joke with people. I'm like, you know, When Trump is done with Melania in bed and she goes out on the veranda and smokes a cigarette, he probably just thinks to himself, the only thing I can't buy is her love. Then he rolls over and falls asleep.
You're supposing that they sleep in the same bed, sir.
I'm wrong.
Stop right there. You just stop right there. Everybody knows that Melania was having allegedly an affair with a bodyguard of hers at Trump Tower, and she probably goes back and forth all the time to see him. Same as if you listen to AJ Benza on our podcast, he loves telling the story about how when he used to go down to Mar-a-Lago, and at the time Trump was with wife number two, who's the one he was married to before this one? I can't even remember her name.
It's hard to keep track.
Yeah, I know. He picked her out of a modeling book, and that's how they wound up, you know, screwing. And ultimately, she got pregnant, so he had to marry her. And when she was down there with him, you know, they were just dating at the time before she got pregnant. She was having an affair with her bodyguard, and he didn't care. You know, he just wants a good-looking woman on his arm when he needs her to be there. Not necessarily that he wants her, just that he needs her to be there. And the only reason he married the other one, whose name I can't remember, who had Tiffany, is because she got pregnant. So, you know, I don't think he cares. You're right. The narcissistic personality requires them to be this way with people. It's a necessity, and the insecurity. You know, the fact that Howard would block me from Twitter made me laugh hysterically. I was like, "Are you kidding me?" It's like, how could you possibly care about the stupid things I say about you? How could you care about that? You know, it amazes me. I love it.
Well, that's what I mean. It seems like he's a very little man to get mad that Radio Gunk is doing podcasts about him while he's making $90 million a year.
Exactly. Can you imagine? We laugh about it because, you know, but again, it's the sand in the oyster. I love it. I love that it makes him upset. I love that, you know, we can spark just a little bit of him being upset because we use his name in a headline, so we know he gets Google alerts every time his name is used on something. You know, it just makes me happy to know. And not that, and believe me, if I ran into him in the street, I'd say hi, you know, great show, and I'd walk on my way. You know, I'd probably never admit that I'm the person behind Radio Gunk. You know, I still do. I run into Mel Karmazin, who used to run Sirius for a long time. And I run into him a lot in Central Park. And, you know, I'm friendly with him. I'm friendly with his wife. And we chat and our dogs, you know, play with each other and whatever. I've never said to him, I've never told him that, you know, I have this podcast that's very anti-Howard. I'd be curious to see what his reaction would be to it, but I've never revealed it to him ever.
Yeah, it's just I think this has been a fun episode. It gives a little bit of insight into the wild world of Howard Stern, or maybe deranged. I don't know.
It might be deranged. Yeah.
No, it's just odd to me that he I just can't wrap my head around that need for validation that Trump or Howard or just people like that need. It's like if you're not constantly kissing their ass and sucking brown round from it, they just get real pissed off.
Yeah, but don't you think that a lot of Hollywood is like that? I mean, you wouldn't be in that business if you didn't need constant validation, you know? The fear of rejection is so great. And so when you do make it, you become bigger than yourself. You become bigger than the person that you were. So therefore, you are no longer, you know, ex movie star. You're no longer Jennifer Lopez, you know, from the hood in the Bronx. You're friggin' J-Lo getting married to A-Rod. You're, you know, you're this mega superstar. You are no longer that hood rat, you know, who's still completely inarticulate. You are bigger than yourself. And so you have to live up to that reputation. And if somebody puts you down or somebody, you know, is negative towards you, you have a lot of people around you who kind of insulate you from the rejection and the negativity. So you're allowed to live in like this weird plastic bubble of disillusion or of illusion and live that way. So once you pop that bubble and you come out into the real world and, you know, and you see that people really don't fucking like you, you know, you get really pissed. How dare you? How dare you? I'm amazing. I am the world's greatest interviewer. I am a superstar. How dare you not like me? And it offends them. And it amazes me that, you know, we can get to him. I relish in it, but I think that's what it is. They've built themselves up so high and so big that any form of rejection, when it's able to pierce, you know, that impenetrable bubble, becomes really, really hard for them to take.
You're almost making me feel like oddly sympathetic for them. Like I almost feel bad for them now.
No, you don't. Yeah, they'll get over it as soon as we hang up.
Well, I guess finishing up here, I always like to end on a positive note. I think this has been a fun show, though. I don't know if there's anything positive we can say about Howard Stern. Maybe we have a positive note with this Oompa Loompa in chief getting out of office soon. What's your take on the future and where it stands?
So I will admit I have been in the past a Beto supporter. I have given money to his campaign. I think that a lot of people are kind of giving him a little bit of shit right now, but I would love...
That's half my listeners, I have to be honest. But all my listeners are like far to the... They're like Bernie guys, but it's all good.
Yeah, I don't... You know what? I think there needs to be an age limit. I think, you know, if you're going to be 80 in office, I think you really can't be. Like, I don't... You know, same way I feel about people in Florida should be taking a driver's test after they turn 80, like every 3 years. I don't think that you should be in office after a certain age. I would love to have somebody young. I would love an amazing ticket with a Beto, Kamala, something like that. I think that Biden's going to get into the race. I think name recognition will be amazing for him. I think he'll pick somebody like Stacey Abrams to be his running mate. That would be an amazing ticket. But you know what? Biden, I'm not necessarily sure that three time is a charm anymore. Again, you know, a really old guy who has a lot of baggage. And I'd much rather have somebody who's a little bit younger, more dynamic, and can actually put together a bunch of people that aren't crooks and going to jail and, you know, getting fired on a constant basis. I think we need stability, which we do not have. I don't think it's good for the media, and I don't think that they'll appreciate it. But I do think that we need to, like somebody said this morning on the news, you know, this is a virus that needs to be eradicated. And I agree with that. And I know a lot of people on my forum do not agree with me, and they know my feeling on things. I have voted Republican in the past. I was a born and raised Republican, you know, dyed in the wool. And I,
well, this dude is not a normal Republican. Donald Trump is not a normal Republican.
No, nor is it the party that I grew up on, you know, nor is it that party. So that's why I've kind of, you know, switched to the dark side, if you will. But again, you know, I'm not a tree hugger. I'm not that fucking liberal, and I hate being called liberal. Why can't I just be normal? Why can't I just be like 90% of the population, where we just want to see our government run correctly without wasting money on $50,000 friggin' toilets and, you know, and just throwing money away on wars that, you know, people that are going into the army today probably weren't even alive when they started. So, yeah, it's all bullshit. It's really all bullshit. And, you know, I'm never going to say there's good people on both sides, because right now I think that the Republican Party is completely beholden to this man. I personally feel that he basically has a dossier on every single one of them, as given to him by somebody like the National Enquirer or some foreign entity, and put it in front of the top 20 Republicans at the time in Congress and said, here you go. This is what I have on you. You fuck with me, this will be revealed. I'm sure there's photos of Lindsey Graham sucking some cock. I am sure that there are things out there that, you know, nobody wants revealed. And this is what makes them beholden to him. So if, you know, if that 30% was worth it to you, knock yourselves out. And if he wins again, God bless him. Because you know what? It affects me none. It really doesn't. And I'll be fine either way. But I would love to see a strong young. I love that guy, Mike Buttigieg, or whatever his name is. I thought he was amazing the other day. The mayor from Indiana, maybe? Don't even know. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's so articulate, amazing, smart, young, you know, doesn't have a chance in hell to win. But you know what? I gave him some money because I wanna be on his list of people to see what the updates are with him and who he is. And I firmly believe that I don't think a woman's going to win this year. That's all I got.
Well, you know, I was going to say, too, I think that it's kind of funny Trump's in there right now, because I often have wondered if he actually wanted to win.
No, I don't.
I mean, this motherfucker is going to have the Secret Service walking around with him for the rest of his life, him and his family.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, right? I mean, that's the God's honest truth. And you know what? Listen, people love him. I don't get it. I truly don't. I don't understand how somebody who just lost their job at GM could go on the air and say, well, I still believe in his ability to get things done. And it's like, oh, how'd that work out for you, GM worker, soybean farmer? You know, how is this working out for you guys, coal guy? How's this working out for you? But
I gotta say, I'm in the Rust Belt, so I've known people like that. I also know people that are like middle-class suburbanites that voted for Trump because they thought it would help with their taxes, and it has not so far, and they are very angry.
You know, that's the amazing thing about it is this was for the wealthy. This tax cut was for the wealthy. I know a lot of people who benefited completely from these tax cuts, but you know what? 99.9% of people, not so much. But you know what? Whatever. You voted for him. You got him. This is what you wanted. God bless you. Knock yourself out. I hope you're happy with your decisions. Maybe you'll go crawl back into, you know, your cabin in the woods and not vote this time around. I don't know. Don't care.
We got Monique on political fire here.
Woo-hoo! Yeah, you know, I try to stay out of it both on Twitter and on my website, but, you know, sometimes you just can't help it. I mean, everybody knows how I feel. I'm not saying anything new to them, trust me.
Well, on that note, I just want to give you a chance to plug Radio Gunk. We got to get the cheap plugs in there, folks. And anything else you're working on right now?
Absolutely. Okay, so I'm going to be on Stuttering John's podcast. I don't know when, today, tomorrow, next day, something like that. RadioGunk.com is the main website where you can listen to and download all of our podcasts. RadioGunk.com/forums is where everybody comes to just bullshit about whatever's going on in the world. We also have another little subsite of that called Radio Geek, and those boys also do a podcast about Marvel comics and, you know, just comic fandom and stuff like that, which is really cool. And sometimes I post that on the site as well. And we are on every single, you know, podcast availability place that you want. We are on Twitter at Radio Gunk. We are YouTube, same thing. That's all I got. Oh, and we just started on Instagram. So, yeah, so we have at Radio Gunk on Instagram now. I have no idea how I'm going to find the time to do that, but we'll try. So that's all I got.
Folks, if you want to hear Radio Gunk, want to get some dirt on Howard Stern, definitely listen to the podcast. Thank you again, Monique, for coming on Parallax Views.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And keep in touch with me so that I can put this on my site as well.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Radio Gunk's Monique. Thought it was a fun conversation. And if you enjoyed it, I highly recommend checking out the Radio Gunk podcast. If you liked this episode, be sure to comment, like, retweet, share it on social media. Get the word out there about Parallax Views. And if you're feeling generous, please feel free to donate to the Parallax Views Patreon. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views. To Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxiety problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.